Okay, so for this morning and the next 2 weeks, we're going to continue our short series. Started this just a little while back on Old Testament basics, lack of a better title. No, it's not very catchy. Old Testament basics. We had that out front to draw in the hundreds and hundreds of people, wouldn't it? Old Testament basics. So this is part of a larger plan of helping us to better understand and appreciate the Old Testament when we read it. The material is something that we plan to build on in the months and years ahead, especially when we cover the Old Testament books of history, which is on our chart to do, and then later at some point, the books of the prophets. And as you may remember, our attempt to become better familiar with the Old Testament started a couple years ago with that extended series on the Pentateuch. And just a quick note on this, the sermons for the rest of this month are going to be a little shorter than normal. It fits in with the kind of the season, the dog days of summer. No one complains about short sermons, especially in July and August, correct? Amen. Or ever. They never complain about whatever the month is. So for this morning, we're going to go back to our timeline. I introduced this a while back. We've been visiting it off and on. We're going to start to fill some things in. We're just going to, this morning, devote ourselves to tackling some good old chronology. This is going to be a life-changing sermon. Hopefully, it will be educational, so maybe it will be life-changing in the long-term perspective. But you may remember from previous weeks, in order to keep things simple, I propose that we could just simply divide the Old Testament into seven time periods. Periods that would be easy enough for anyone to remember. Now, other timelines that you look at, they're going to break down things maybe in more periods, and we might eventually do that, but for now, I just want to keep it as basic as possible. And again, here, just to point out, this chart is not drawn to scale. It simply helps us to visualize the sequences. So let's see how everybody is doing. The first one's easy enough. Beginnings, after this, is followed by a period that we just simply called the Patriarchs, all right? And then we have, okay, I don't think anyone's going to do very well on the test here. Sojourn, conquest, settlement, all right? Next one, what follows that is a monarchy, united monarchy, followed by a, we got one. All right, okay, divided monarchy. Then we have the exile, and then what happens after the exile? The return, and everything that happens after the return, post-exilic Judaism or Second Temple Judaism. All right, so we're going to work through this. We're going to start to fill some things in. Maybe we just need to take the whole morning and memorize this together. I don't know. All right. So with each period, we're going to review which Old Testament books you would go to read about what's going on during that time. We covered that the last time, but we'll do that again. And then we're going to fill some things in a little bit more by talking about some of the major people and events in those time slots. And the purpose here is just to give us kind of a, and then we'll offer some dates, make it an actual timeline. And the purpose here is just to kind of give us a general idea of when things occurred. And so the dates are going to be approximate, especially for the earlier periods. And we'll probably be more concerned with precision later on at some point. All right, so this is Old Testament 101. Ready? Okay. I'm going to assume that a lot of what we cover today is going to be familiar to most of you, but probably not everyone. So we're going to start with this first period, the beginnings. This would be the first part of Genesis, first 10 and a half chapters. Key events here would, of course, be, what's the first key event that takes place? Creation. There we go. See, you guys are gaining traction now. All right. Pretty obvious, the creation of the universe, creation of mankind, Adam and Eve, the mandate given to them to fill the earth and exercise dominion over it. Then we have the fall, we have the first murder, Cain kills Abel, the human race then descending into sin quickly, God's decision to, this whole thing's a mess, he decides to start over. So we have the building of the ark and the flood, then God's covenant with Noah, and then the Tower of Babel. And so this period ends with God calling Abraham roughly around 2000 BC. The period begins with the act of creation, but we can't really ascribe a date to that. Many have tried to postulate a date based on the genealogies found in the Bible, but as Josh Birch showed us recently, there are problems with that particular approach, which brings up another Babylon B meme here, so. Now, that one is really funny, I thought. Okay, the next period would be that of the patriarchs. This would be the rest of Genesis, so really the last two-thirds of the book and the first part of Exodus. So again, it starts with Abraham, who is the father of the Jews, all right? Other key players include his son Isaac, Isaac's two sons, Jacob and Esau, Jacob's 12 sons, who become the 12 patriarchs of the 12 tribes of Israel, okay? You have to know that. Hopefully everybody does. The patriarchs are crucial in Old Testament history. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Jacob's 12 sons. So that will be on the final exam, which we will have at the picnic this year before we eat, okay? It's going to be like a 45-minute quiz. On this note, I think most of us realize that Jacob is also called, what's his other name? Israel. God changed his name after he wrestled with the angel of the Lord, and the name Israel means wrestled with God. So
going back to that quiz, do you have to pass it to eat?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. We did this, actually, my first year, we went through James. I'm surprised you guys didn't fire me. You should have fired me, because we had...
upgrading on a curve.
Yeah. We're grilling hamburgers, and everybody's hungry, and we're smelling the hamburgers being grilled, and we got to take this real long quiz about James. It was a wonderful time in my career here. People hated me. All right, and still do, so. Which is fine, That's right. Whatever it takes. Okay, key events in this period include people watching online that don't hear all the bantering are going to wonder what's going on. All right. Key events in this time period would include God's covenant with Abraham, the institution of circumcision, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the birth of Isaac's sons Esau and Jacob, transfer of birthright from Esau to Jacob. Then we have the births, of course, of Jacob's 12 sons. The selling of his favorite son, Joseph, into slavery. Joseph ascending to the second in command over Egypt. Joseph's reunion to his family. They all move to Egypt. There's rapid and prolific multiplication of Jacob's family in Egypt. The Egyptians get worried about all this, and so they force them into slavery. How many years of slavery? 400. And then we have the birth of Moses and Moses growing up as an Egyptian. So we date this from about 2000 BC to around 1500 BC. Could have made a 400-year period of slavery as a separate time slot. But according to the Pentateuch, really nothing all that significant happens during that time except that they multiply and serve the Egyptians as slaves. So going on now to the third period, sojourn, conquest, settlement. This period is described in the rest of Exodus, so it'd be most of that book, all the way to the end of Ruth, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, and Judges. So this is a large section of the Old Testament. A lot happens. Begins with Moses confronting Pharaoh. We got the 10 plagues, the institution, the Passover. Moses leads the Israelites out of Egypt, crosses the Red Sea. Moses receives the 10 commandments from God on Mount Sinai, the covenant with Moses, the building of the tabernacle, the order to march into Canaan and take possession of it as the land promised by God. The response, however, is fear and disobedience, thus the 40 years of wandering in the desert. After this, that disobedient generation dies out, and now under Joshua, they cross the Jordan and begin the campaign to take Canaan again, and they start with what town? Jericho. All right, after this, there are a number of conquests and various struggles, even failures, but mostly conquests. So then this brings us into the era of the judges. And finally, the birth of Samuel, who has many roles, prophet, priest, judge, and military leader. So we would date this period roughly from 1500 to 1050 BC. All right, now we enter into the United Monarchy. The events here recorded for us in 1 and 2 Samuel and the first half of 1 Kings. So some of the events are also found in 1st and 2nd Chronicles. So let's just take a quick minute here to talk about that. From even a casual reading of the Old Testament, it becomes obvious that 1st and 2nd Chronicles covers many of the same stories found in 2nd Samuel and the two volumes of Kings. So much so that one might wonder why we have two separate accounts of that period in our Bibles. And the answer is similar to why we have four Gospels. Each were written for different readers, and each had a somewhat different purpose. For instance, 1st and 2nd Kings, which originally were one volume, were written during the Babylonian exile, while Chronicles written after the exile was over. So again, two completely different audiences. And the basic message found in the Kings is that God's people failed to honor their covenant relationship with Yahweh. The events recorded clearly show that it was because of their hard-heartedness and sin that led to their downfall and captivity. God did not abandon them. Rather, they abandoned God. The Chronicles, on the other hand, again written after the Jews returned from exile, focuses more on the restoration of Israel. The underlying message is that the Jews must turn to Yahweh as the one true God and remain faithful to Him. And the stories that you tend to remember from that time period are probably taken from the Kings, because the narratives there, quite frankly, are more interesting and more colorful. And those are the ones we tend to remember. All right, so back to this time period, the United Monarchy. This is easy to remember. We can sum it up with the first three kings of Israel. They would be who again? Saul, Solomon. Okay, these are the glory days, but yet they're still very turbulent and troublesome. Some of the more major events during this time period include Samuel anointing Saul to be the first king over Israel. Saul proves to be unfit for the job. God rejects him, chooses David. David is crowned king after the death of Saul. With David, the actual dynasty begins. He conquers Jerusalem, makes it Israel's capital city. He recovers the Ark of the Covenant, brings the tabernacle into the city, starts plans for the construction of the temple. All of this, along with his slaying of Goliath as a young boy, cements his kingship in the people's minds. And it becomes clear that he enjoys the favor of Yahweh. Also in this period, as we know, David sins in a big way. He commits adultery and then commits murder to cover up that adultery. We have the rebellion of David's son Absalom. God punishes David for numbering his people. Solomon becomes king upon David's death. God blesses Solomon for seeking divine wisdom. Solomon builds a temple for Yahweh. Solomon succumbs, unfortunately, to a life of hedonism and sexual promiscuity, marries hundreds of foreign women who lead him away from God and into idol worship, even the worship of the detestable gods of Molech and Chemosh, who were known for human sacrifices. We don't know if Solomon participated in that, but those gods were worshipped in that way. And this period ends when Rehoboam, Solomon's son, David's grandson, becomes king upon Solomon's death. So we would date this period from 1050 to 950. All right, everyone tracking me so far? Sure. All right, so here we go. Number five, we now have the divided monarchy. Hopefully you're familiar with the story here. This would be the second half of 1 Kings to the first half of 2 Kings. All right, second half of 1 Kings to the first half of 2 Kings. Rehoboam, as we've talked about earlier, leads with a heavy hand. And as a result, 10 of the 12 tribes reject him as king and secede from the union. They split off. They reside in the northern part of the land, and they retain the name Israel. And their first king was Jeroboam. And several more kings followed him in the coming years, none of whom were faithful to God. Every king was bad. Every king was evil. Meanwhile, Solomon's son Rehoboam presides over the southern kingdom, which includes the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. And the southern kingdom was commonly referred to as Judah, and it included the city of Jerusalem. And many kings came after him as well, most of whom were bad, but there were a few good ones. Good kings you would recognize included Jehoshaphat, Hezekiah, and Josiah. Other key figures during this time would include the prophets. Two prophets, similar names, would be Elijah and Elisha, and we would date this period of the divided monarchy from 950 to 700 BC. Now, when you read the account in 1 Kings of the 10 northern tribes splitting off, we should note the significance of what they say. chapter 12, verse 16, down with the dynasty of David, this is what they say, down with the dynasty of David, we have no interest in the son of Jesse, back to your homes, O Israel, look out for your own house, O David. And it was a complete rejection. And from that day on, the 10 northern tribes refused to be ruled by any descendant of David. And in so doing, they rejected the privileges and the blessings that God promised to David's house. And that is worth remembering. However, there would be times when Israel and Judah would join together in some military endeavor. And this often happened between Israel's king Ahab and Judah's king Jehoshaphat. Okay, moving on to the sixth period, the exile. Man, we're just moving through this real quickly here. I got like maybe 2 minutes left. No, just kidding. More like 20. Here we go. The exile. This is covered in the second half of 2 Kings. As noted in previous weeks, we need to remember that there are actually two exiles. The northern kingdom, Israel, falls to the Assyrians in 722 and are taken captive. Many are deported to Assyria and they are absorbed into its people and culture. We never hear from them again, and they are often referred to, therefore, as the 10 lost tribes of Israel. Ultimately, they got what they wanted. They wanted nothing to do with the house of David, and that's what they got. And so they were assimilated, integrated, lost into the society and culture of their enemies, the Assyrians. And my illustration a few weeks ago about the Borg is pretty accurate about this. I mean, the Assyrians, they were ruthless, they were known to be cruel, and resistance was futile, to use the English words right from the movie, futile. All right. Do I comment more on that, or was that enough? That was good. Okay, good. All right. How many of you know what I'm talking about when I say the Borg? Which is the greatest part of this Star Trek, the Borg? All right. Of course I would like the Borg. All right. Then around 130 years later now, in 586, the southern kingdom, again, it's called Judah, suffers a similar fate, but not as severe. They are taken captive by the Babylonians, and many are deported to Babylon. King Nebuchadnezzar orders Solomon's temple to be ransacked and destroyed. And some, by choice, are integrated into Babylonian culture. But many of them faithfully maintain their identity and customs and allegiance to Yahweh, at least to some degree. And the events described in the book of Daniel take place during this exile in Babylon. In fact, Daniel interacts with 5 Babylonian kings. And the period ends when King Cyrus allows Jews from Babylon to return home. So we would date this period, again, roughly from 700 to 550 BC. And then finally, we have the return from exile. And this we would read in Ezra and Nehemiah. The Persians have now conquered both the Assyrians and the Babylonians, and its king, King Cyrus, permits Jews to return to their homeland. This takes place in 3 main stages, stretched out over 100 years. This period also includes what we've been referring to as Second Temple Judaism or post-exilic Judaism. Upon their return, under leaders like Zerubbabel, Ezra, and Nehemiah, the nation is reestablished. The nation might be too strong of a word here because they are not independent, but they are allowed to rebuild their temple along with the wall of Jerusalem and establish themselves as a people. At some point, they assume the name Israel once again. And this period also includes what we might call revivals under Ezra. Ezra had the people listen to the public reading of Scripture, called upon them to follow the law of God. The Israelites responded favorably to this. They were convicted. They repented, even to the point of divorcing their foreign wives and sending them back to Babylon. So we would date this period from 550 to 400 BC. Chronologically, the Old Testament ends with the final chapter of Nehemiah. Also, the events described in the book of Esther take place during this time period. There's a story about Jews still being held captive in Persia. All right, so that's just a general sweep of the Old Testament history. After this, we would have what we call the intertestament period, 400 years between the Old Testament and New Testament. Okay, is this helpful? How many of this was very, very familiar? Very familiar. How about somewhat familiar? Not familiar? Completely new? Anybody? Anybody? Okay. All right. Someone's willing to admit it. That's good. All right. So I'm guessing that in the three areas, the three areas of the Old Testament where many of us might still be a little weak in would be the divided kingdom, the exile, and how the prophets fit in with all that. Would that be safe to say? Okay. So we're going to talk about that here just for a little bit. Eventually, we hope to be doing a whole series on this, but let's just go ahead and get kind of a basic introduction to it so we can build on that later. We have 17 books at the end of our Old Testaments, each one named after the prophet himself, except for one. Which one is not named after the prophet? Lamentations, very good. We don't exactly know who the prophet is behind that, who's responsible for Lamentations, but it's widely assumed to be Jeremiah. So these 17 books are often divided between major and minor. The major prophets are Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, and Daniel. And they are called major not because they are more important or that the prophecies are more inspired, but because the books are
longer.
There you go. At the end of the Old Testament, they make up the most bulk. And then we have 12 minor prophets: Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. So these 17 books fall somewhere on the last three periods of our timeline: the divided monarchy, the exile, and the return. Altogether, they span a period of around 200 to 300 years, okay? I think when we just do a casual reading, we're thinking that they're all written within 5 or 10 years of each other. But they span over 250 to 300 years. That's, you know, a long time. So most of them are directed toward the people of the southern kingdom of Judah. Isaiah, Joel, and Micah prophesied before they were conquered by the Babylonians and taken captive. Jeremiah, Daniel, Habakkuk, and Zephaniah at the time of the fall and during the exile, and Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi at the time of their return. So I went through that kind of quick. I don't know if you're trying to write it down, but we'll get more into this later on. Now, Lamentations doesn't really contain any prophecies. It consists of 5 songs of lament, grieving over the fall of Jerusalem, and describes in pretty vivid detail the destruction of the city and the suffering of its people. And it was written during the exile. All right, so regarding the northern kingdom, Israel, the prophets that spoke to them were Hosea and Amos before they were taken by the Assyrians, but nothing after that. So only 2 books to the northern kingdom taking place before the exile. All right? Was that helpful? Okay. Again, we'll get more into that. So, and then we have 3 prophets who spoke to the enemies of Israel and Judah: Jonah to the Assyrians, in particular people residing in the capital city Nineveh, and this takes place about 60 years before they invaded the northern kingdom of Israel. And this book is, I don't know if it really belongs in the prophets, because it's more about Jonah's experience in delivering the message than about the message itself. In fact, when I read through it again, I only found 1 prophecy, and it was just a short sentence. In 40 days, Nineveh will be demolished. I mean, that's the message. The rest of the book is all about his experience. But that was all it took, because we know the response to that. They repented, and God spared them. All right, Nahum also spoke to Nineveh, prophesying their destruction, but this was after they had invaded Israel, so like maybe 150 to 200 years later after Jonah. And Obadiah's prophecy was directed to Israel's longstanding enemy, Edom, predicting their downfall. So again, this is just a basic overview, and you know, hopefully we'll be building on it in the coming months. All right, so while we're at it, let's place the writings of the Psalms on this timeline. The book of Psalms was written over a period of approximately 1,000 years by a number of different writers. The earliest one is Psalm 90, and it's called the Song of
Moses.
Very good. Song of Moses. David, of course, is the most prolific of the composers. Over 70 psalms are attributed to him. His son Solomon is credited with 2, possibly 3 psalms. This means that most of the psalms were probably composed during the United Monarchy. And some were written during the exile, like 137, which you are probably familiar with. Most people are. This is the one where the captors are tormenting the Jews to sing them one of the songs of Zion. And they complain, saying, how can we sing one of the Lord's songs in a foreign land? All right, the last psalms to be composed are probably the last 5 there in the Psalter, 146 to 150. Many scholars think that they were written to celebrate the dedication of the Second Temple. Okay, so one more thing to cover before we finish up. As we consider the whole chronology of the Old Testament, there are 5 men, 5 important figures who stand out as significant marks on our timeline, important in the sense that it is through each of them that God establishes a covenant. Some covenants are more significant than others, but it is through them that, these covenants play a key role in redemption history in God's grand plan to rescue the human race. And we're going to talk more about covenants next week, covering kind of the whole general concept. And then next summer, we'll spend some time on each of the covenants that God made with these 5 men. Why those covenants are important, how they played a role in God's plan of redemption. And these 5 figures would be Adam and Noah and, of course, Abraham and Moses and David. So Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, and David. And a case can be made that the Old Testament is organized around these 5 figures and God's covenantal interactions with them. So we begin with the agreement God had with Adam and Eve in the garden, then with Noah and the with Noah after the flood, followed by Abraham regarding his descendants in the land of Canaan, then God's covenant with Moses and the Israelites at Mount Sinai, and later on with David specifically regarding his dynasty and the promises related to that, all of which lead to the new covenant that God made with the human race through his son, Jesus Christ. All right, so that's it for this morning. Did everyone keep up with everything? Too much information? All right. How many lives were changed today? An altar call would be in place, maybe would be appropriate. I was hoping it would be taxing and difficult, so I don't know if I reached that or not. But I do have an assignment for you. I'd like for you to read Joshua chapters 9 and 10. Chapters 9 and 10 of Joshua will be very helpful for what we'll be talking about next week. All right, so let's stand. I didn't get somebody assigned to close for me, so I'll just go ahead and close, and I will do some lucky dipping here and find the, it points to this one right here. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Upon those words, you are dismissed. Go in Christ's name. Enjoy each other and serve each other in love.